Welcome to Psych Pearls podcast by Psychiatric Times. With thoughtful insights into the world of psychiatry, this podcast provides timely clinical commentary and practical cutting-edge pearls for you and your practice. We hope you enjoy it.
Hi, I'm Dr. Hannah Simon. I'm a second year fellow in child and adolescent psychiatry at New York Presbyterian Hospital and a former high school biology teacher. This podcast, Caring for Our Tweens and Teens, explores critical mental health issues as they impact youth today. Over the course of the next six episodes, we'll be interviewing experts from various domains, including substance use, performance, athletics, eating disorders, school anxiety, and social media. Today, we are thrilled to have the U.S. Nordic ski team and Olympic team physician with us here, Dr. Andrew Chen.
Hi, Hannah. How are you?
I'm good. So just to kind of start us off, Dr. Chen, can you tell us a bit more about what your role entails as the chief medical officer for the USA Nordic team? How did you end up in this role? What was kind of your pathway to get here? And what do you do on a day-to-day basis?
So I oversee the medical well-being of all of our athletes. This includes the medical care, the psychological well-being, and nutrition in year-round fashion. We have a team of outstanding physicians that travel with the teams both domestically and internationally. When an incident or injury occurs on the road, it takes a lot logistically to coordinate their care, from immediate injury care to disposition to how to get the athlete home for definitive care. I'm also responsible for policy. So through COVID, I was responsible for coming up with policies and procedures to keep our athletes safe and competing. I'm happy to say that USA Nordic was able to get through our athletes through the entire last year without any infections, except for two that were infected from school, but none from competition and training. So I did my fellowship many moons ago at the Stedman Hawkins Clinic, where I got involved with the US ski team. And from that, I joined as a pool physician and sort of worked my way upwards to chief medical officer. So it's been an exciting journey for sure.
And, you know, thinking about, given the Olympics that just ended last week, and all of the sort of media attention around Simone Biles and her mental health journey, as we know, she withdrew from several events in the gymnastics finals in order to prioritize her mental health, and kind of referenced having the twisties, this disconnect between mind and body, that can be potentially very dangerous. I'm thinking about what you do day to day. I imagine that there must be parallels in the ski world. And I'm wondering about how, you know, Simone Biles, how her decision may have impacted the ski community, or whether within your community, you may see sort of a similar phenomenon of athletes who really need to focus on their mental health in order to preserve their physical safety.
Sure. So fortunately, I think we've reached the day and age in which it's not only socially acceptable, but even laudable that a star athlete like Simone Biles can have the courage and conviction to come forth publicly with mental health issues. And for this, you know, I really congratulate her. It's not an easy decision by any means for someone who has the weight of her country on her shoulders to step away from a competition like the Olympics, particularly with all the media attention and hype. You know, from the general public perspective, it's controversial. As you can imagine, it takes a tremendous amount of time, money, and resources to get to that level. And the general tendency of the lay public is to say, you know, suck it up, you're an athlete, that's your job. But from the athlete perspective, I think social media and technology have really placed a tremendous amount of added pressure on them. You know, interestingly, athletes tend to be very superstitious people. It typically stems from some combination of factors that were present when an athlete was performing well or not. Nonsensical things like what pair of underwear or socks were they wearing, or what did they eat for breakfast, or put their right or left foot down when they first got out of bed. I mean, it seems silly, but athletes will recognize these factors and often attribute success or failure with them, whether or not they make sense. for Simone, it was likely multifactorial. You know, she had recently lost her aunt. There were no fans in the stadium and her family wasn't allowed to be present. I believe she said this was her first competition without her mother present. You know, things like this can really throw an athlete out of the zone and affect their performance. Believe it or not, our athletes see this as a positive thing that she came forth. It demonstrates that even a superstar athlete like Simone Biles goes through the same psychological pressures that they do. So it really humanizes her successes and shortcomings. It also brings to light and encourages the global discussion on the impact of mental issues on elite sport and performance. And in that way, it kind of takes the pressure off them by encouraging them to bring such issues forth. Most importantly, from the elite sport perspective, it has brought to light the need for us to provide adequate resources that athletes can turn to really help them perform optimally.
I absolutely agree. I think that her kind of coming forward really destigmatizes a lot of mental health struggles that other athletes, either, you know, the professional level or just, you know, participating in high school sports like our kids might experience. I'm wondering what mental health resources are available for Olympians to navigate some of these stressors, whether there's, you know, therapists, psychologists, what do they have access to?
Sure. So in the past, athletes would be reticent to come forth with these issues due to fear of reprisal, such as being pulled from competition or public ridicule. But the days of the coach saying, you know, get your head straight and get back in there, those days are over. And we now very much encourage our athletes to speak openly with sports psychologists. Some athletes choose to deal with emotional and psychological stressors in their own way. For example, many athletes will go for a run or some other exercise regimen that allows them to blow off steam. Often this is just what they need to psychologically come back to center. Others will use peers, more experienced athletes, or coaches to talk through issues, as often these individuals will have experienced what the athlete is experiencing at some point in their own careers. For more significant issues, we have a sports psychologist that works closely with our athletes. Fortunately, in this day of technology, our athletes are able to video conference with her even while abroad. I think we realize that by getting athletes to deal with their mental health issues head on, not only cultivates the athlete, but also lets them know that we are there for them to take care of their physical and psychological well-being. And the knowledge that we've got their backs not only inspires confidence within the athlete, it also improves and enhances the team dynamic.
I'm also interested in your take on how the loss of school team sports during COVID has impacted some younger kids. And, you know, given kind of this year of unprecedented adversity, losses for many of our youth who've lost their teams, their graduation, their proms, what can parents do to really encourage their kids now to get back out the field, the rink, the slopes, you know, as things are opening up, how can they help their kids start playing their sports again?
So, you know, we're well familiar with the benefits of school sports, things like physical health, weight management, self-confidence and self-esteem, socialization, psychological well-being, et cetera. And the pandemic has really taken a significant toll in this regard. There was a recent study that was performed at the University of Wisconsin School of Public Health that showed that of the over 3,000 school-aged children that were surveyed, anxiety and depression to the degree that would typically require medical intervention was up by 68%. Moreover, they showed that physical activity levels were down by 50% and quality of life scores in this group across the board were lower than they'd ever been. The CDC reported that a 51% increase in suicide attempts in girls aged 12 to 17 in 2020. And this was shown to be secondary to social isolation, an increase in substance abuse, family health, and economic factors. So it's apparent that taking kids away from school, their activities, and their peers has been really detrimental to their overall well-being. That said, you know, in the current state of the pandemic, it's really difficult to make recommendations. I think earlier this summer, we were at a point where we were really dialing down on restrictions on school activities, particularly those that were outdoors. But with the recent uptick in infections due to variants, the immediate future for these kids is, in terms of their activities, is unclear. As for the Olympians, you know, those guys really barely missed a beat. In the early stages of the pandemic, everything was shut down. But fairly soon thereafter, they got back to traveling and competition internationally, albeit with stringent safeguards that we put in place to maintain the overall health of our teams. Bear in mind, though, you know, we're talking about very small team cohorts, less than, you know, 10 or so people in a bubble, and that makes it very manageable. And the fact that even making the national team is a privilege makes enforcement of compliance with our restrictions very easy. We didn't have to convince anyone to return to sport or comply. You know, once you make the national team, you do everything to keep your spot.
For many of us, Simone Biles' choice really shed light on how much both psychological and physical pressure these athletes face on a day-to-day basis. Despite these early setbacks, she wasn't even able to go on to compete and win bronze on the balance beam. How do you think Olympians are able to overcome such immense anxiety and stress to go on to achieve these incredible physical feats?
So as we probably know, Olympians do not deal with anxiety and stress the same way that normal kids do. I mean, this is really what makes them Olympians. Olympic athletes have single-minded focus and determination with an intensity to which most normal individuals just can't relate. Each athlete is going to have his or her own routine with dealing with the pressures of training and competition. We do appreciate the fact that an athlete's psychological readiness for competition is vitally important for their performance. For example, issues in an athlete's life, such as financial stress or a recent breakup, can negatively affect the athlete's overall outlook on life and negatively affect their performance. On the other hand, elation or an overall sense of happiness and contentment can positively affect how that athlete performs. So to maintain this degree of mental resolve, it's important for athletes to blow off mental steam during downtime by regularly focusing on things other than their sport. For some, that may mean taking remote or online courses, while others will read or play video games. I think we now better understand that by varying our mental focus, that allows us to better see the big picture, to psychologically bring us back to center and allow us the mental grounding that's necessary to maintain that level of dedication. But you're correct, you know, whether it's when it's game time, you know, stress or anxiety that would oftentimes be perceived as negative and detrimental to a typical person's performance often becomes the challenge, that rush of adrenaline, the stimulus that puts them in the zone for competition. The fact that Simone was able to surmount her own mental health issues from earlier in the games to come back to win bronze is truly amazing and something that probably most individuals would not be able to do.
Imagine for athletes that are used to performing at such a high level, just being told, hey, you know, maybe it's good to take some time for yourself to play some video games, to watch a movie, to slow down. Is that ever a challenge? Do they ever push back and say, no, you know, I'd rather use this time to train more or, you know, to build muscle mass? Is it essentially difficult for them to take time to unwind?
You know, I'd say for the majority of them, you know, they're just kids. They like playing video games just as much as the next kid. But for some of them, it's like you have to force them to quit. It's their passion, but it's also their job. And they've been encultured from a very young age, be all about the training, to be all about the sport. I mean, that's what it takes to get to that level. And for some, especially when they do get into a bind or they are in sort of a mental fog that's not allowing them to perform as they should, we almost have to force them to do things. You know, we on the road have a lot of team building activities, things like going go-karting or for a bike ride, things that are just completely away from their sport that still allows them to feel that competitive nature, to still blow themselves off exertionally, and yet allow them the sort of psychological grounding that they need to get back to sport and perform well. So I think that's a little bit mixed in terms of who you talk to and which exact athlete you're talking about.
And I think, you know, talking about how important these kinds of interventions are for maintaining your emotional and physical well-being. So taking time to rest, engaging in enjoyable activities, spending time with your community. Another domain that could be considered is just the importance of diet, nutrition, and whether that's something that's really prioritized among your athletes. Do you feel that diet and nutrition, you know, play an important role? And are there certain kind of nutritional regimens that athletes tend to follow that are more helpful?
Sure. So, you know, sports nutrition is a field that has really morphed in the last several decades from anecdotal recommendations or level five evidence to a true science with level one data. It's such an inherent part of elite athletics that now many athletes will say it's time to fuel instead of it's time to eat. The good news is there's a lot of information on the internet about how nutrition can optimize performance, and athletes will oftentimes first turn to these resources. The bad news is that, as we know, there's a lot of misinformation that needs to be sifted through. And that's where team doctors, trainers, physical therapists, and sports nutritionists are important to help them synthesize that available data and come up with an individualized plan. For example, the macronutrient needs, things like protein, carbohydrates, and fat, they differ greatly whether you're a power lifter that needs to maximize strength and muscle mass or a cross-country skier who needs to be lean but still have endurance. Athletes regard nutrition as one of the top factors that affect their performance. I think we can all learn from that. I mean, whether you're a laborer that needs to consistently perform physically or a scientist that requires focus and mental clarity, nutrition can be critically important. The majority of the top causes of death in the United States, things like cardiac disease, cancer, and diabetes, these are all modifiable with diet. I think that as a society, we need to take ownership of what we take into our bodies, not just for ourselves as individuals, but for the overall good of society.
And Dr. Chen, I'm going to put you on the spot right now.
Okay.
Working with these athletes, it's clear that they've over time really honed some mental and personality attributes that make them able to perform at this high level, right, under lots of stress. In your opinion, what are the five most significant personality attributes that you think make for Olympic performance in the professional athletes that you see every day, the youth that you coach?
Sure. So I think that's a great question. I think in this day and age of positivity, it's great for all of us to imagine the possibilities of what we can achieve or who we wish to be. The problem with that way of thinking is that we tend to think in terms of nebulous concepts, like I want to be more successful or I want to be a better athlete. But in order to achieve these oftentimes monumental tasks, we really need to come up with a plan. It's easiest to begin by eliminating bad habits that ultimately prevent us from ever reaching our goals. So Olympians tend to follow several basic principles that allow them to simplify their lives and excel. So number five, don't overcommit. If you're trying to get into shape, for example, it's really best to start simple and gradually increase from there. You don't want to feel overwhelmed and overburdened from the outset by jumping into a heavy routine. The key to success is to make it habitual. It's best to hit smaller home runs. That will give you a sense of pride and satisfaction and ultimately improve your performance. Number four, don't overthink things. So in this day and age of technology, we tend to focus on things that are measurable, things like steps walked, calories burned, heart rate, et cetera. And doing so can drive you crazy and cause you to lose sight of the goal of living your best life. Instead, it's more important to see the big picture. You want to keep the goal in mind, but really have fun with it and allow your creativity and passion to come through. Number three, don't over-restrict. If you're trying to improve your diet, for example, overly restricting yourself will lead to feelings of deprivation and defiance. Instead, it's better to allow yourself occasional liberties, but only on special occasions. You don't want to make your bad habits habitual. Number two, don't dwell on the negative. Things don't go our way all the time. It's just life. But focusing on a bad outcome, feeling sorry for yourself, ruminating about what could have been or should have been, these things carry a lot of psychological weight. They're emotionally draining, and ultimately the outcome can't be changed. Instead, it's important to make room in your life for constructive, positive things like gratitude, self-confidence, and rededication to purpose. This speaks to emotional resilience and the ability to come back stronger. This is one of the true hallmarks of what makes an Olympian. And number one, pivot. Perhaps no attribute is more characteristic of an Olympian than their ability to make rapid, decisive changes for the better. The typical athletic career of an Olympian is finite and short, and as such, the ability to pivot is almost of necessity in order for them to achieve success. A lot goes into the ability to pivot, things like dedication, resolve, strength of character. This speaks to why Olympians are who they are. This is a huge topic, but one of great interest to me, as those at the highest level of sports, business, academia, you name it, they all seem to share the same capacity to shed undesirable habits in favor of ones that allow them to succeed.
I have to say, I'm hearing you talk about this, I'm struck with how similar it sounds to a lot of the tenets that we teach in forms of therapy, like cognitive behavioral therapy, working with kids dealing with depression or anxiety, where the importance of gratitude, of emotional resilience, of kind of cognitive flexibility, of optimism, of sort of reframing negative thoughts in a way that are productive. These are all tenets that are, you know, near and dear to our hearts in child psychiatry. So it's great to see how the same, you know, we're utilizing the same tactics, whether it's training athletes or just helping kids, you know, overcome their anxiety about going back to school.
Sure. Yes. For example, you know, when an athlete comes in second, okay, that is devastating for that athlete, you know, because they were so close to gold. Instead, they got silver. Okay. And on the one hand, they say, oh, geez, why did I get gold? And they beat themselves up over it. Well, guess what? Second means you beat everyone else. I mean, that's something that they honestly should show gratitude for. It's something that's amazing. It's something that should fuel their determination that perhaps if they just did a little bit better, maybe they would be the gold medalist. So it's interesting that you say that, because when you reframe things, you know, don't look at like you didn't get gold, you got second. No, you beat 59 other people. And yes, you got silver, but maybe the next time you'll be golden. So I think it's true that we not having any formal education in sports psychology, I think it's interesting that we sort of came to the same conclusion.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Chan. It was really, truly an interesting and enlightening conversation. I feel like I've learned so much about kind of, you know, what mental health wellness looks like in athletes at higher levels. I've learned a lot about, you know, what you do day to day working with skiers. And yeah, I'm excited to see how, you know, when do we see the Nordic skiers perform next? I can't wait to watch.
Well, you know, it's funny because Nordic skiing, and in particular ski jumping, is huge in Europe. Ski jumping is probably the number one or one of the top sports, at least in the wintertime. It's not something that we as Americans focus on, except when the Olympics come around. And by the way, the Olympics come around in February of 2022 in Beijing. So that's when all of a sudden Americans tune in to watch ski jumping and Nordic events. Otherwise, you know, the other 3 years, it's sort of in obscurity unless you want to watch it on the Olympic Channel, which I think it might be run by NBC. So,
well, I will certainly be tuning in February 2022. Newfound fan.